new efforts in Jacksonville and Florida to combat the raging opioid epidemic. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, September is National Recovery Month. Find out what's being done around Florida to address the opioid epidemic. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Going Green looks at Florida's back trails and backwoods inside the pages of a new book. Plus, it's a new radio show on 89.9's After Hours Music Block. We'll have a musical preview of Avant Radio. All of that ahead. But first this hour, a closer look at a topic we visit regularly on this program, the opioid crisis. Governor Rick Scott and legislative leaders signaled Tuesday that addressing the state's deadly opiate epidemic will be a big issue during the 2018 legislative session. Scott says he's going to propose spending $50 million on drug treatment programs around the state. And he also wants other changes like prescription limits for pain medication. Here on the First Coast and around the country, millions of people are suffering and many dying from addiction to opiates. Now, in Jacksonville, a pilot program is getting underway next month to better treat victims. The city is also looking at suing the pharmaceutical manufacturers of opiates. The other day, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Gwen Graham said she thinks the governor and State Attorney General Pam Bondi should also sue pharmaceutical companies, given the horrible toll this crisis has had here in Florida. September is National Recovery Month. So right now, we've got some important information on what's being done in this area to help thousands of people with treatment and recovery. Lakeview Health in Jacksonville is on the forefront of this effort. Here with more, we are pleased to welcome in studio Ashley Harms, alumni manager at Lakeview Health, and she is in long-term recovery herself. Ashley, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And joining us by phone, Lakeview Health therapist Juan Diaz. Juan, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here's our question to callers. Governor Scott wants to spend $50 million in the next state budget on drug treatment programs to combat the raging opiate epidemic in Florida. He also wants limits on the number of days you can get a prescription for this type of medication. Other changes. At the same time, Jacksonville's looking to sue the opiate manufacturers, and a new pilot program is getting underway to help treat people here in this county. What are your questions about all this? The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets go to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on Facebook. Ashley, let's begin with you. You're a manager at Lakeview Health, but you've also been a patient. You're in long-term recovery.
That's correct. I am.
And tell me your story. How did this all begin for you?
So I began drinking at age 12, and from that it just progressed to other substances, mainly pharmaceuticals.
Including opiates.
Correct, yeah.
Why did you start drinking at age 12?
I would say just not being comfortable in my own skin, not feeling like I belonged, just not knowing how to handle those emotions.
And so you went from alcohol to pills, and did you get addicted to opiates?
I did. I got addicted to opiates and benzodiazepines, which is your Xanax, Valium, Klonopin.
At what point did you get into treatment? What prompted you finally getting into treatment?
So at age 19, I finally went to treatment, and it was a very lonely place for me. The drugs and the alcohol were no longer working for what they were originally doing for me, and I didn't know how to stop. So for me, I needed to go to treatment.
And you went to Lakeview Health?
I did not go to Lakeview Health. I went to a place that was not as nice, and I regret it.
But it helped.
It did. It worked for me, but I look at the program that we have at Lakeview Health and how much more holistic health people get there, and I wish that I had that opportunity.
It's 549-2937. Juan Diaz, you're a therapist at Lakeview Health, and Lakeview and other organizations are getting ready to launch a pilot program in Jacksonville to help treat people like Ashley who are struggling with addiction. Can you tell us what's going to be happening?
Well, it's definitely needed. It's going to open the door for more people to get treatment for opioid addiction. And not only just to stop using the chemicals, but it's also going to help them help enhance their quality of life.
And so, yeah, and this is a different model of treatment, isn't it?
Yes. It takes a holistic approach to helping people not only recover from addiction, but to also, enhance their quality of life. So help them become what we like to call productive members of society.
Let me ask you both what you think about calls to sue the opiate manufacturers. Gwen Graham, who's running for governor, has challenged Rick Scott and the state attorney general. She said the state needs to do more. They need to take these pharmaceutical companies on and sue them. In Jacksonville, they're looking at doing the same thing. Ashley, do you think that is a good idea?
Addiction is such a touchy subject for those that haven't lived it themselves. I hear so many times, well, it's their fault. Why don't they just stop? It's their choice. And while taking that first drink or drug is everyone's choice, unless, of course, they get prescribed it by a doctor for an accident, any type of pain issue. But with an alcoholic or an addict, something goes off in their brain that they need more. They after taking that first drink or drug, they want more, and that's no longer a choice.
Is that what happened to you?
That is what happened to me. I know plenty of my friends that were able to drink, and they enjoyed it, and drank socially, and were able to just not, exceed that limit, and I wanted to push all limits.
How much did you drink? How many pills did you take?
When I first received treatment, I was taking 6 milligrams of Xanax a day, which is a lot for a 19-year-old. And then I was drinking every day, probably, 7-plus drinks.
And how did you get the Xanax?
I was prescribed it.
You went to a doctor? Your parents took you?
I hid it from my parents because they knew my addictive tendencies from an early age. But as soon as I was 18, I found a psychiatrist that had that word on the street that they were a little, loose with prescriptions. And I went in, I knew what to say and how to act, and I was given exactly what I wanted.
Now, Juan Diaz, Governor Scott says as part of the reforms he's pushing, he wants doctors to check a state prescription drug database before writing prescriptions for pain meds, a database to try to help prevent addicts from doctor shopping and, exploiting loopholes in the system, as Ashley just said, to get the drugs. Right now, doctors aren't even required to check this database. Do you think these types of policy changes can make a difference?
Well, I do. Melissa, I did a lot of treatment work in the state of Pennsylvania, and I had the opportunity to do some lobbying around addiction and treatment, and along with working with people to really expose these doctors and pharmaceutical companies on over-prescribing patients prescription medication. So I believe it's, yes, I believe that, that will help because, the addict moves around and, it, without a database, people cannot really identify if they are on medications or if they need them or not, opposed to just giving them prescriptions.
And Juan, this is a public health emergency, given that here in Duval County alone, bodies are piling up at the morgue faster than the medical examiner's office can process them due to overdoses, primarily from opiates.
Yes. Yes. And that's unfortunate, And so not only with a database, there has to be some there has to be a crackdown on, you know, these doctors and these pharmaceutical companies who are making billions of dollars, you know, off of people who are addicted to opiates.
Now, Ashley,
knowing that they're addicted.
Right. And Ashley, you started as a preteen, but as you pointed out, often people get sucked into opiate addiction because they've got some kind of pain, and the doctor legally prescribes a painkiller, and they have an addictive brain their brain chemistry is such that they get quickly addicted to the opiates, which are highly addictive substances.
Absolutely.
And they start seeking out stronger and stronger versions of the drug, including street fentanyl, which is a very dangerous, lethal form of opiate.
Correct. And now it's even the carfentanyl. It's heartbreaking to see, as a person in long-term recovery, just see people not get the gift that I've been given of you know, a happy, joyous, and free life.
And you were lucky. How did you end up in recovery? How did you get there?
I went to treatment involuntarily. And
were you going to go to jail if you didn't?
I had really nice police officers let me know I was either going to be arrested under DUI, or I could go and go to the hospital and be transported to rehab.
And you chose rehab?
I chose rehab.
Okay. What are your thoughts about National Recovery Month? As Governor Scott says, he'll allocate an additional $50 million in the state's budget next year to treat this raging opiate epidemic. It's 549-2937. Give us a call as we speak with the folks from Lakeview Health here in Jacksonville. They're on the front lines of this. 549-2937. Bill is in Mandarin this morning. Hello, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning. This whole thing seems to argue to me to support the need for a good national health care program, because part of it is concern, or Goodwin would be concerned with preventive of this kind of thing, because it could be tracked nationally when this kind of stuff starts to show up on the radar screen. Our current private, you know, approach is just a contributor, as you discussed, to the cause of the problem.
Thank are you talking about national health insurance, like Obamacare, or are you talking about
the insurance concept? That's just pure baloney. It's cost us extra money and a red herring of time that just go in, like other healthcare systems in Europe. You come in, you get sick, we take care of you. We also monitor what's going on throughout the country, so when we see an uptick in some kind of a special drug like we have going on here, it can be cut off at early in the stage and not allowed to proliferate.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Juan Diaz, there have been several efforts in Washington in recent days to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act with something different. Essentially, it would involve block granting health insurance coverage to the states. Now, what about Bill's point of view in terms of how the current piece of legislation handles prevention efforts when it comes to addiction? I'm not an expert on this, but I do think it did have a piece that the legislation did deal with that in some fashion or other. Can you bring me up to speed on that, and how, if we change our health insurance mechanisms in this country again, how will that affect this portion of the healthcare system?
Well, to my understanding, the Affordable Care Act was developed to help doctors communicate with one another more effectively in terms of treating patients. And this is still an issue in our country, because opiate-addicted people can still travel to different physicians and get multiple prescriptions without people looking at a database or even inquiring about whether or not they have an addiction or not.
Now, so what you're saying is you'd like a national database. Whatever was in the legislation, it didn't solve this problem, in other words.
Well,
it tried
I'm
to.
Not sure. Yes. I believe that it attempted to. I don't think the follow through. Well, it's pretty obvious. The follow through was not there with the communication.
Okay.
Because more people are being addicted every day.
Right. State leaders want to do, Ashley, is doctors would be required to use a database in Florida that does exist, but they're not required to use it. But they would be required to check a database when writing a prescription for the first time, and then again every 90 days. Do you think that would stop some people from spiraling into addiction?
It's a great start. I think we're so backwards on how we handle addiction in general. It's a criminal offense rather than looked at as, you know, a disease that needs treatment and needs to be treated rather than punished.
Yeah. And efforts to change the way we handle addiction in terms of moving away from incarceration and more aggressively into treatment, how would you rate those efforts in Florida?
Oh, very poor. Very poor. If you don't have quality health insurance, the waiting list to get into any community-based treatment center, it is just unrealistic. When someone has that moment of clarity and that moment of willingness to go to treatment, they need to be in very quickly because that it's a fleeting moment. So, you know, Lakeview Health is great at that. We have a really quick turnaround with intake. However, you know, those community-based treatment centers don't always have that same ability.
The state's looking at beefing up funds to treat addicts and combat Florida's opiate epidemic. September is National Recovery Month, and we have lots of calls out there. Daryl is in St. Augustine now. Hi, Daryl. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I just read an article, I'm not sure if it was Bloomberg or New York Times, comparing Portugal to and their issue. They legalized it, all drugs, turned it into simply a health problem, and they have an 85% drop in addiction. You know, they said it's not perfect, but an 85% drop would be wonderful. That's the number one thing from that. The second item is, do doctors or physicians of any kind get revenue or incentive or money in any way from the actual prescription, or do they only get the money from, you know, the $100 for the customer, if you will, coming in? Okay, yes, you've got a hurt shoulder or headache, and here's your prescription. Do they get any money from the pharmacy or from the drug companies so that they are incentivized to write more?
Okay.
And then the last comment I have is it's kind of ironic that the governor made $100 million from the health care business, and now he wants to go around and say that we should all work with solving with our revenue and our money the problem that he helped create.
Thanks comment. For that, Daryl. Okay, 3 points from Daryl. One, let's begin with his observation about, and I've heard a lot about this recently, how Portugal has addressed its issue with addiction. Do you think the U.S. could learn from Portugal? And what about his other points?
Well, I don't think legalizing it is effective, you know, because, I mean, this country is different. So legalizing, just like how some states have legalized marijuana, right? It's becoming problematic in a lot of those states that are really, even though, you know, the thought of it was, you know, people thought that it would be a benefit for the state, but it's really affecting the people.
And what about his other question? Do doctors have an incentive, a financial incentive, to write more prescriptions?
Well, sure they do. Absolutely. You know, when you figure when you go to your physician and you get a prescription for anything, whether it's a heart medication or a medication for diabetes, well, you know, they get incentives from that.
Okay. Shannon is in St. Nicholas. Hi, Shannon.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
So I think that you guys are touching on really great points about how to address the issue with different programs that are available. But I think essentially until we fix the medical field as a whole, doctors are treating symptoms. They're not treating the root of the cause. People are going to continue to get painkillers. They're going to continue to turn to painkillers because they continue to have pain. I think that doctors, you know, it needs to be addressed that doctors need to treat, like I said, the root of the issue rather than just, oh, you have pain, here's a painkiller, you know?
Sure. Thanks, Shannon. Ashley.
Yeah, that's such an important issue. And pain, being in recovery or sobriety, is another huge thing. Lakeview Health is going to tackle it with a pain recovery program that's using holistic methods to treat the pain so people don't have to rely on narcotics. And that is completely individualized. So it's not going to be the same fit for every person. Some people, some people laugh at it, but going to a chiropractor, doing yoga, you know, taking some other, you know, non-addictive substances for the pain is so much better without all the consequences of opiates.
Tara tweets the show, access to treatment needs to be available regardless of ability to pay. Incarceration of those with addiction without treatment is dangerous and counterproductive. All right, let's go to Emily on the West Side now. Hello, Emily. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. I agree with a lot of the points here, but I just wanted to bring up one issue that Ashley has pointed to that I don't agree with. Being a cancer patient and going to surgeries and finding it very difficult to get a narcotic to help with pain after surgery, I get frustrated because there's diseases and there's addiction. And I think that some accountability has to be with the person. And to lie to a doctor, to get a prescription, to tell the doctor and know that you went to a doctor that was kind of loosey with his prescriptions, I can't blame the doctor because the doctor's trying to get the person out of pain. I don't always blame the doctor. The person who's an addict has to take some responsibility. But I am, and I have a question, like, why would Ashley feel that it wasn't her choice because she was prescribed it? That doesn't set with me. But I'm very happy that the officers did get her help, and I do agree that they put them in jail instead of helping them with their addict. But my question to her is, it is a choice. She made a choice to seek out that doctor and tell him lies to get that prescription.
Okay. Thanks, Emily.
Yeah. So the addiction epidemic is definitely causing a lot of people that genuinely do need help with pain and opiates are the only option, some trouble. That's absolutely accurate. As far as being a choice, I would say I do have those symptoms. I do have anxiety. So I was not lying to that psychiatrist. But the way that he went about treating me, I can say for myself, was wrong. As an 18-year-old, I should not have been given 6 milligrams of Xanax a day. That's an extremely high amount. But you're right. It was my choice to seek out that psychiatrist. What I mean by alcoholics and addicts not having a choice is I had taken Xanax prior to that appointment with that doctor, and I knew that that's what I wanted. And I had become addicted to it prior to seeing that doctor. And rather than buying it on the street, I wanted, you know, a cheaper, easier, legal way to continue taking that substance.
A couple of more tweets about Portugal. CB tweets the show, just to clarify, Portugal did not legalize, they decriminalized. They still go after dealers. And they had a commensurate crime rate drop along with an addiction rate drop. So what Portugal did was they decriminalized it for people taking the stuff. They still incarcerate people selling the stuff. Thanks for that tweet. Sherry is in Neptune Beach. Hi, Sherry. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead.
I wanted to bring up a different side of all of this, and a lot of research shows, or we actually have the experience in the United States of prohibition. When alcohol was taken, the access to alcohol was taken away. It did not stop people from drinking. It did not stop alcoholism. It actually increased criminal activity. It increased the products became more potent. People were doing, making the alcohol in their backyards. The same thing's happening with drugs. So people become addicted to or dependent, I'd rather use the word dependent, on the prescription medication. People are dying from the street drugs that they're forced to get access to now with the fentanyl and the heroin and those kinds of things. That's what's killing people because they can no longer get access to their other medication.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you put in the money for treatment and rehab, just taking away somebody's access does not change the underlying root of the problem, does not change the underlying addiction. And most people's insurance, I love the idea of other kinds of treatment for chronic pain, the yoga, the biofeedback, the mindfulness, and those kinds of things. But most people's insurance does not cover that, or they only cover it for a very short period of time. And so people are back again with the problem of chronic pain and being forced to use things that they can get on the street if they can no longer get their medications from their physician. And I wanted to clarify one more thing. Physicians do not get kickbacks from pharmacy or pharmaceutical manufacturers for every prescription that they write. That was not correct. They do get the money for the visit, but they don't get kickbacks for writing OxyContin prescriptions. That's just not true. I wanted to correct that.
Okay, so, thanks.
And I will sign off. Thank you.
Thanks, Sherry. Jerry in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yeah, it's actually Terry.
One of the things I wanted
to point out was that when we're talking about addiction, we're talking about a disease, not just a criminal behavior, and that for us to treat it as a disease allows us some hope. If you gave 100 people opiates for 30 days, at the end of that time and stopped it, everybody would go into withdrawal, but only about 20% of those people would be addicted. And it is a change in the brain and something we need to treat as a disease. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Jerry. Juan Diaz, your final thoughts about that?
Well, it is definitely a disease. And, you know, we really need more efforts into treating the addicts with opiate addiction. It's more of a like a pandemic now, you know, because, you know, these our addicted people that we see, you know, lots of them start out with prescription medication, and then when they cannot afford it anymore, then they resort to whatever is on the street to deal with their pain. You know, pain is legitimate, but there are other medications that we use here at Lakeview and other people use that are non-narcotic that can also help with pain. So we have to do better in the state of Florida, which treat our opiate-addicted people.
And we're getting emails, which I just don't have the time to get to, about how difficult it is for people, including one mother who emails me about how difficult it is for her to get her daughter the help she needs. And so, Ashley Harms, let's end with you. For people listening out there that need help, they need to call programs like Gateway in Jacksonville and also Lakeview Health.
Absolutely. And they can go to our website, lakeviewhealth.com. They can call in 337-5332 and ask for help. If we're not a right fit, we can help direct. Anything someone needs, if they need to find out where a meeting is, if they need, you know, if we have a great family program, so any family direction we can absolutely help with. And
if they have no insurance, what?
Still call us. We have an intake department, and we have great resources that we can direct them to.
Okay. Ashley Harms, Juan Diaz, both of Lakeview Health, as we talk about National Recovery Month. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead on the show. Later on, we're going to debut an exciting music show on the station this week. We'll have a preview of Avant Radio. But up next, it's our Going Green as we take you through Florida's hidden backwoods places. And right now, here's how you can support WJCT.
Give us a phone call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528. Or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Murchard, co-producer of First Coast Connect. Once again, we're having a great program discussing the opiate crisis and what people are doing to help others overcome their addictions. We've had many programs on the opiate crisis here at First Coast Connect and putting every aspect of it that you could think about. We talked to psychiatrists, we talked to other doctors, we talked to the medical examiner. All of this is possible because of listeners like you showing your support. We can make it happen, but only because of help from people like you. So make that call now, and thank you very much. Once again, 353-9528. 1-800-722-9528, online at wjct.org. And every day during this drive, we're going to be giving away an Amazon Echo. Matter of fact, our day three winner is Lisa from Jacksonville. Congratulations. She's getting her Echo, and you can get the next one if you call in today and show your financial support. Also, we're going to give away an Echo show at the end of the drive on Friday. That's a bigger thing than that. It's got a little screen on it. But it's a nice thing. I've talked to people who actually own Echoes, and they just love them because of just how easy it is to use and all the things you can do with it. Make that call now, though. 353-9528. 1-800-722-9528. Go online at wjct.org. Every day we bring you great programming, but it is not cheap to bring you all this programming. Morning Edition, All Things Considered. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. All this costs dollars to bring you the stuff that you enjoy listening to. So we just ask, what is it worth to you? Is it worth $10 a month to you? Become a sustainer for $10 a month on your credit card. Just call us up and say you want to put $10 a month on your credit card, and we'll sign you up, and it'll be great. 353-9528. 1-800-722-9528. And thank you very much for supporting this, your public radio station.
Great question. That is a great question.
And that's a great question. Wow, that's another great question.
That's a great question.
Oh, that's a great that's a great question.
That is a great question.
What a great question.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear unexpected questions and unexpected answers. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
We are always looking for that perfect echo in the doo-wop revivals, Sunday at 8 and Monday at 9. We play the best in doo-wop, a cappella, and a little mix of soul.
Welcome back. Well, it's your chance to experience wild Florida with a fascinating new guide to dozens of off-the-grid hikes from every corner of the state. Now, Florida's five water management districts encompass millions of acres of public property and thousands of miles of public trails. One woman who knows them well is Terry Mashour, a former land manager who's been to so many of these little-known hideaways. In today's Going Green, Mashour shares amazing stories from Florida's natural world in her new book, Backcountry Trails of Florida, a guide to hiking Florida's water management districts. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And this isn't just a hiking book, but it's also tales of your experience as a female land manager out in the woods with, I'm guessing, a bunch of guys.
You know, it was a bunch of guys. It was also many women as well. It's pretty common to have women out there burning. We did a lot of the women, I did not go up in helicopters, but we would go up in helicopters to drop fire down. We rode horses to do prescribed burns. We rode airboats to burn the marsh and the water. It was such an exciting job.
Did you work for the state's water management districts? Is that who employed you?
I worked for the St. Johns River Water Management District
as a land manager.
Yep.
Okay. So in the course of doing that and doing things like prescribed burns and so forth, you got to see some little hidden places that people don't know about.
Yes, you wouldn't believe, even right here in the middle of Jacksonville is Julington Durbin Preserve, which has over 2,000 acres of sandhill habitat. But additionally, just an hour and a half west of us on I-10 is Big Shoals State Lands, where you have river rapids on the St. John's River. When you walk up to that and you hear the roaring, you know, rapids and water going, you just can't believe what you're about to walk up to and how beautiful and amazing it is.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many places like this all over the state. In your book, Backcountry Trails of Florida, you give people a guide wherever they happen to be in the state.
Right. So if you're traveling to Florida, and we have millions of people that come every year just for recreation and fishing, you can look for where you're going to be and all the properties that are there. Or if you'd like to do the Florida Trail, you can see all the water management district properties that are on the trail. If you're going to visit the Everglades, you can find the properties there, and then you'll know how to hike the levees and the ditches that are surrounding the Everglades.
Now, let's talk a little bit about our part of the state, the St. John's River watershed. In your book, you write that not only are there places like the Julington Preserve, but there are cattle ranches, lake shores. There's all kinds of variety.
Right. Historically, the old Florida cattle ranchers had their property on the St. John's River. So every year I would go and visit those ranches to monitor their conservation easements. So we paid them to protect their land. They kept it, owned it, managed it, but we just didn't want them to build and develop. So just east of St. Augustine, Orlando are huge cattle ranchers. And the men would take me around their property and show me the tree that they carved their love initials on growing up, where they had their home, you know, parties growing up, and just tell me all about their cattle and their families. And just amazing to meet these people who remembered when the freeze of the 1800s came and their grandparents left everything on the table and left Florida because they lost all their orange groves. Just growing up in the middle of Jacksonville, I never even knew there were cattle here and just learned so much working in this job.
Yeah, it is funny. In fact, I think I saw on some show one night, America's largest cattle ranches are in Florida, which is mind-blowing.
Right.
Don't realize that they're there.
Right. There's a huge ranch called Deseret down in South Florida near Orlando. Huge, huge ranches. But a lot of them have been purchased by the water management districts because their families can't really operate them anymore and make money. They're basically land wealthy, but money poor. So they ended up selling them. But their parents really wanted them in conservation. So they were thankful to be able to sell them and make money, but still be in public land.
So out of all the places you've seen, what are your favorite spots around the state to get into the woods or into a really beautiful, quiet, natural place?
My favorite spots are always the springs. So there's one called Devil's Hole on the Ecofino watershed that is so far out in the sandhill. I went out and I just thought I was never going to get back. I thought I was going to get stuck and no one would ever be able to find me. And it's the circular teal blue spring just in the middle of pine trees. You would never know it was there. And you better believe I did not touch it because it was named Devil's Hole. I just thought I was going to fall in and never come back.
Uh-huh.
So there's so many unique springs, Poe Springs near Gainesville.
Florida springs are really quite magical, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah. And are you going to be doing any book signings that we can talk about?
I will be at the Jacks by Jacks Festival on November 11th, so I'm super excited to be here locally. I will be at the Miami Book Festival November 17th and 18th, and then I'll be at San Marco Books in November and the Book Loft on October 7th.
Got a lot coming up. In the meantime, pick up Terry's new book, Backcountry Trails of Florida, a guide to hiking Florida's water management districts. It's that time of year when we can get out and hike again. Terry Mashour, thanks for sharing this with us.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be right back.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Join WJCT and Special Forces Association Chapter 88 for an evening watching, listening to, and discussing the many stories of service from the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War and Stories of Service is October 3rd at 7 p.m. at WJCT Studios. For more information and to RSVP for this free event, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
Hi,
I am Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Stuff, you know. Welcome back. Well, Hurricane Irma postponed a lot of cool events around town, sadly, but you know what? Everybody is just moving forward and rescheduling what they had planned. One event is rescheduled for tonight, and this is a really good one that you need to check out. It's the North Florida Drive Electric Rally. And this will bring together EV drivers, electric vehicles, and people that want to learn more about them. And this is an interactive event where you can come out and test drive the latest electric vehicles on the market. Dozens of people have already pre-registered for this, and you'll get to come out and see everything from the Nissan Leaf, the Tesla Model S, the Chevy Bolt and Volt, and much more. And you'll get to test drive them. North Florida TPO and JEA officials will also be on site to tell you about this area's ChargeWell network of EV charging spots around town and how they're growing that. Full disclosure, North Florida TPO is a sponsor of this program. So come on out tonight, enjoy drinks and food, and test drive some amazing electric vehicles. This kicks off at 5 p.m. tonight at downtown Intuition Ale Works. That's at 929 East Bay Street near the stadium. That's the North Florida Drive Electric Rally, and it's tonight at 5. Well, finally this hour, WJCT's After Hours Music shows have an exciting new addition this fall as Avant Radio launches on 89.9 in just a couple of weeks. Creator Keith Marks is here with a preview. Hey, Keith.
Hi, good morning.
Okay, so you have started Avant Music already in Jacksonville, which was an exciting project. This is an extension of that. What is Avant Radio?
So Avant Radio, it allows us to take our mission of bringing dynamic, diverse, eclectic, engaging music to Jacksonville. So instead of doing a few concerts a year, now we'll be able to work with WJCT to expose North Florida to amazing music.
What kind of music?
So each show is going to be themed and curated, and we kind of give some context for all of it. And so each show really is going to be very different. So the goal is exposing people to new music, people who are interested in learning and being, you know, learning about new music. So each show will have a different theme, and they're wildly different. We have some guest curators. So Philip Pan, from a former concertmaster from the Symphony, is curating a show. The former A&E editor from the Folio, Dan Brown, has a show. And we're looking to just really turn people onto new music and bring in a new vibe to Jacksonville.
Is this music from all over the country or all over the world?
Oh, easily all over the world, time period. So each show will have, like I said, a particular theme, and that theme can be as loose or tight or academic as need be. But the goal is for people to tune in and want to hear new music.
What got you interested in this?
I'm a music geek, so I'm always digging into new cultures, new eras, new sounds. And so, you know, when I'm sitting around with friends, and I love talking music and sharing, and so this is the next level.
Well, we have some cuts from the new Avant Radio show that we're going to play. Let's listen. Tell us about that.
So that's a I believe that's the Masada String Trio. They're based out of New York. It's part of the catalog that we donated to the Jacksonville Public Library last year. So one of the shows is exploring this Book of Angels catalog that we donated last year to the library. They're talented musicians, you know, a lot of musicians who are either jazz or classically trained, a lot of it, they're looking to explore outside of the boundaries. And so we're looking for music that is outside of genre, outside of boundaries, and just, you know, leave your baggage at the door and just listen to new ears. And, you know, we want to label and classify and judge everything. So.
And avant, does that come from avant-garde?
It lends itself to avant-garde without necessarily being avant-garde. avant, if you look up, it derives from French, meaning combining form. And I really liked the idea of we're combining forms to make something new. And I think that in this day and age, we should be looking to combine forms for something new.
And what I love about our After Hours music block at night that David Luckin oversees, our music director, is it's shows like Avant Radio, which we're debuting, that play music that you really can't hear anywhere else, unless you curate your own playlist.
Yeah, I mean,
that you won't hear this on any other radio station.
Right,
this
other
is music
radio stations,
that's unique.
They work based on genre and format, and, you know, putting us into neat little boxes. And so this is a show for people who are interested in not being categorized and put into a box. So.
How do you pick your selections?
There's a recipe, different recipe every time. So some shows where you start with the idea, and some shows we look at the music, and I've got a partner in this. His name is Mo Ricks. He's my engineer. So Mo and I, we go back and forth and we talk music and we say, oh, that'd be a cool idea for a show. We say, oh, we've got this catalog of music. That would be an interesting, you know, thing. And I think as this grows, we're going to pull in more guest curators. Like John Citroni's got a show, and we've got Arvid Smith is a musician in town, did a show for us. So I'm hoping that the community responds and say, you know, hey man, can I have an idea for a show? Can I come on?
And they can submit their songs to you too. People can submit their work to you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're open. This is a new project. So, you know, if people go to the website avantcurious.org, Avant's tagline is curious music for curious minds. So, you know, people can reach out, and I'd love to build an audience. And I'm really thankful to WJCT and David for, you know, having us.
Right. And this kicks off Thursday night, October 12th at 11 p.m.
Yeah, 11 p.m. So we're part of the WJCT music programming after hours. So
pretty exciting. It's Avant Radio debuting October 12th here at 89.9. Creator and host Keith Marks, thanks so much for sharing a little of your world with us. I can't wait to hear the show.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Melissa.
We'll keep listening to the music, and that is our show for now. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen to us anytime, or catch the podcast on iTunes. Next on 1A, a frightening American crisis is happening on the island of Puerto Rico. We'll tell you about that. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. But right now, here's how you can support our music shows, our news shows, and everything here at WJCT.
Give us a call right now at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Hi there, Kevin Mershart, producer of First Coast Connect, here during our fall fund drive asking for your financial support for this station. Contributions from listeners like you who care about news and the stories you hear and the music you get to hear that you don't hear anywhere else provide the vast majority of the funds it takes to create the radio that matters here. We'll be able to greet you great stories. We bring you terrific information. We were here for you during the hurricane, pretty much nonstop for better than 48 hours. We were here giving you all the information that was important to you. Now, we know that that's what you cared about because we had a lot of people call in just saying thank you for being here because you're the only place I got. The power is out. I just got my power, my little battery-operated radio, and this is the only place I'm going to make sure I get the information I need in a nice, calm manner, and that's what we do for you. So we're asking you to do your part. Just call in and show your financial support. Don't forget, every day during this drive, we're going to give away an Amazon Echo. Now, Lisa from Jacksonville was the day three Amazon Echo winner, so you can win it today. We're going to give one again today, Thursday, and Friday. But make the call now. That's the first thing you have to do. 353-9528. And maybe you don't know what Amazon Echo is, so let me explain. It's a little hands-free speaker that you control with your voice, and it can do all sorts of things. It can play music, it can make calls, it can receive messages, it can get you a ride. You can request a ride from Uber off your Amazon Echo. How about that? Track your steps with Fitbit. You can make dinner reservations. You can turn on the fan. You can dim the lights. You can turn on the sprinklers. These are all these great things this thing does. So this is, you know, fantastic, newer technology that maybe not familiar with. So, hey, it can't be worse than not having one. So go ahead, make a call, show your support, and we will make sure it gets to you. If you are the winner, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. Go online at wjct.org. Why don't you become a sustainer at $10 a month, $5, $10, $15 a month, whatever's best for you. What that happens is that we just automatically take the $10 from your account or credit card every month, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore, then you're still doing your part. There are a lot of people who have done that. We'd like to get more people to do that. We're trying to get 4,500 new owners during this year, and we have only, 12 at the moment, 1,258 to go. That's not too bad. I mean, we could actually probably come pretty close to clearing that up by the end of this drive. But first, you have to take the initiative and pick up your phone and make that call or go online at wjct.org. Once again, the number is 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528, or go online at wjct.org. And thank you for this, your public radio station.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.